Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, everyone. So today we would like to talk about technology transfer to China. This is a politically quite charged topic, but we hope to provide today some new factual insights into this issue. It should be obvious that any form of economic interaction, be it through trade or direct investment, brings with it that trading partners learn from each other, resulting in one form of technology transfer or another. This is a quite normal thing to happen, and we would like to emphasize it up front here before we discuss the case of China. With China, the situation appears to be somewhat special. China is one of the biggest domestic markets in the world, and access to this market is potentially a very valuable thing for Western companies. As a result, Chinese authorities have quite some leverage over Western companies that seek market access, and apparently they use it widely. The European Chamber of Commerce in China, for instance, argues in its latest 2023-24 position paper the following, and I quote, "Policy guidance at the municipal or provincial level, as well as legal instruments, continue to compel technology transfers. For example, local public tenders often include a made-in-China requirement, pushing foreign companies into joint ventures in exchange for market access," end quote. This push by Chinese authorities into technology transfers from Western to local companies is well known, but there also seems to be a pull factor coming from Western CEOs who have personal economic interests into making such technology transfers. This is quite surprising and an interesting insight coming from a recent research paper produced by Professor Jean-Marie Meyer from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Meyer is here with us today to discuss about the technology transfer issue and his research findings. Welcome to the podcast, Jean-Marie. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hello, Dirk and Klaus. Thanks so much for inviting me to your podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about Western technology transfer to China, since it is, in my opinion, a key element of the competition between Western countries and China, which in itself is one of the most important issues at the moment and in the coming years in economics, business, and politics.
Yeah, great to having you with us, Jean-Marie. So before coming to your research findings, which point into a very interesting direction, let us first take stock of the market access barriers that Western companies face in China. So according to your view, what are the main mechanisms through which Chinese authorities coerce Western companies into making technology transfers?
So as a starting point, it is important to understand that unlike in usual business situations, you have not like one company interacting with another company, but you have essentially have a Western company facing the Chinese government partnering up with a Chinese firm. And a Western firm, in principle or in theory, you know, is maximizing profits, while on the Chinese side, they are like maximizing also not just profits, but also they take externalities, technology transfer, national security, spillovers to other firms in the industry into account. So the decision making already to start with is very different, and who is involved. And the next big issue that matters is essentially, there is a lack of the rule of law or the institutions that we are kind of used to in the Western world. They are not the same, especially if you are a foreign investor. It's unlikely that you are facing the same kind of like odds or chances in, for instance, the judicial system. If you have a dispute, that you get the same kind of like fair hearing as or fair treatment as a foreign investor in China, as a foreign investor would be getting in Germany or in the United States. So with that in mind, if then a particular firm is trying to negotiate market access. They essentially have to offer something in return for this market access. If a firm is, and this something usually is technology. If a firm is playing along and sharing its technology, usually by partnering up and training its local joint venture partner, then it is granted market access. This is not binary, it's not black or white. There are different levels of market access depending on how willingly the firm complies. You could be allowed to sell your stuff in China without problems for you showing up, or the Chinese government might actually even help you in generating business for you by basically telling state-owned companies or potentially even private sector companies, this is the company you should buy from, or this is the company you should not buy from. In the case of government procurement, the government might also directly be your customer. If you don't comply, all sorts of problems can magically arise. There can be an environmental audit, even though you have the best environmental practices in the entire industry. You might not get a construction permit, or you need a safety license or some registration for your products, and that is not coming along, or it's like at one city, one province at a time. There might be a tax audit and an antitrust review, or suddenly the state media is covering you and, you know, generating some negative publicity for you. So the issue is that there's not a single practice that dominates. And also, even if one would crack down on individual practices, this wouldn't help these foreign firms that much, as long as the more fundamental issue of the kind of like rule of law or the institutions isn't resolved. Because as long as you have the state supporting this and having this in mind, if you know, would fix, let's say, environmental audits, they would very creatively come up with something else in their toolkit to kind of like tilt the level playing field to enforce the technology transfer. So the only thing that really might help or alleviate this is if a government itself or the European Union might kind of like approach the Chinese government, a counterparty that is like kind of like strong enough, maybe also takes these externalities into account and credibly makes the point, also, you know, credibly, not only what they're saying right now, but also credible with respect that they're going to stick to this for the next 5 or 10 years. Then one might be able to change the operating environment, because then you can say, okay, we are withholding market access from Europe or from the United States. But unless one is, you know, trying to solve it at this bigger level, I don't think this is like solvable at an individual basis for an individual firm. And the fundamental issue really is the kind of like the entire legal situation in China.
Right. So as a Western company, you essentially face the Chinese government and not only a company. And that makes the thing very asymmetric. So are you, what's your assessment on, you know, the trajectory of this? Is it getting better or worse over time? I mean, I've looked at the European Chambers of Commerce business confidence survey from 2023 that said that 70% of the respondents in its survey, which were comprising Western companies, so European companies, reported that they were compelled to make a technology transfer. And this number is 3 percentage points up from 14% in 2022. And this despite China having passed the so-called foreign investment law just in 2021, which should at least in principle prohibit such practices. How optimistic are you about this going forward? And where do you see the current trajectory moving?
So there are kind of like two opposing forces at play. So on the one hand, the power or the ability of the Chinese side to extract technology transfer from foreign firms depends on the size of the Chinese economy, which at least until recently has been growing. So this is kind of like pushing for more technology transfer. On the other hand, the awareness of foreign firms of the risk of technology transfer to China and also of the risk of theft of intellectual property has been growing over time. This wasn't an issue in the 90s. Nobody took China like serious, whether they might be like a large, rich industrial country. This was being more concerned in the 2000s, even more in the 2010s. And I think what is going on is that this issue is actually not more severe, this issue of technology transfer lately. I just think that the pushback from the Western side is getting stronger. There is more awareness, not only among the corporations, who often have an incentive to keep these kind of like disputes and be like at a low profile. I think it's especially on the media and on the politician side that these things have become more salient. So my take on it is that it's just a pushback that is getting stronger, and maybe that has dampened how much foreign companies are willing to go along with this. And actually in our paper, we find some results that speak to this question. We find that the technology transfer follows a kind of like inverse U-shaped pattern, meaning it's like the effects are there through our entire sample, but they are like the strongest in the mid 2000s, and they're getting like weaker afterwards, and they're probably even weaker now because of these opposing forces that I was just laying out.
Yeah, let's talk about this paper of yours, and that has just been published, or it's a recent working paper titled, Did Western CEO Incentives Contribute to China's Technological Rise? And it's jointly written with Bo Bian. So in this paper, you investigate to what extent CEOs of Western companies have monetary incentives for making technology transfers. So what's the main idea behind this research question? From what I understand, it has to do with long-term versus short-term incentives within companies.
So the key idea here is that there is a short-term benefit of doing business in China and a long-term cost of doing business in China. So imagine it's the year 2000, you're producing power plants, and every couple of years, China is installing as many new power plants as the entire stock of power plants in Germany or France. So in the next 2-3 years, you might have tremendous sales and profits coming in. On the other hand, in the more long-term future, 5 or 10 years from now, you'll be facing more technological competition if you go for this short-term business, because you essentially have to train your local future competitor to reap these profits. And we asked the question whether the firm's management of this short-term versus long-term trade-off depends on the CEO incentives, in particular the structure of the CEO compensation. The CEO might profit from this like short-term performance of the firm, but the CEO might no longer be around when the firm is hit by these long-term consequences. This relies on the assumption that the stock market is not perfectly able to price or observe this technology transfer in real time. And there is lots of empirical evidence that at least for innovation activities for firms, this is not something the stock market is good at. This technology transfer is only observable in hindsight too.
So that's quite interesting. So what you find, you say, what you're looking for is whether CEOs with high-powered incentive contracts form more partnerships with China, and as a result of that, transfer more technology or not. So what is it that you find? And and also, how can one measure the strengths of the incentive component in these contracts?
So our main measure of CEO incentives is the delta or the portfolio delta of CEO compensation. So if the firm's share price is going up by 1%, what's the dollar change in CEO compensation? Always controlling for the level of CEO pay. And we find that if CEO incentives are one standard deviation more high-powered, technology transfer to China goes up by 10%. The effect is also unique to China. We don't find an effect of these high-powered CEO incentives on technology transfer to other large developing countries or to other Asian countries. And we also go a long way in the paper to show that the results are highly robust to other measures of high-powered CEO incentives. So that's the kind of like, it's high-powered CEO incentives that matter, and it holds in very different ways.
So how large is then the effect of CEO incentives to establish joint ventures and strategic alliances, including technology-oriented ones in China? Do you find an economically meaningful size of the effect coming from those CEO incentives?
This is a good point. At the level of the individual firm, if CEO incentives are one standard deviation more high-powered, a Western firm is three times more likely to open a new joint venture or a strategic alliance in China in a given year. And then if you look at the aggregate level, our main sample is S&P 1500 firms from the United States. If these firms overall had a one standard deviation lower powered CEO incentives, there would be 36% fewer joint ventures by these firms in China. And I think this is an economically large and meaningful effect.
Yeah, it's a staggering number. It points really to a very large contribution of these incentive contracts on the willingness to make the transfer. But how can we make sure that the CEO incentive structure and is really causal for that transfer, and that the result is not driven by a third unobserved factor, so that the relationship between CEO incentives and technology structure is really there as you interpret it?
This is a great question, and there are multiple things that we do to address this concern. So we use a so-called quasi-natural experiment. In the early years of Bill Clinton's administration, there was a change to U.S. tax law. As a consequence of this tax law, some but not all firms experience a change in the structure but not the level of the CEO compensation. And then those firms that were affected by this tax law change, they also transferred more technology to China, and arguably this tax law change in the US had nothing to do with firms' investment opportunities in China. We also look at a way to vary the kind of like strictness of the so-called quid pro quo policy of the kind of like sticks and carrots that China is offering firms. They have these 5-year plans in China, and in those industries outlined there, this technology transfer policy is particularly binding. So there are very strong carrots, even bigger short-term benefits, but also a more strict enforcement of this trade-off. And we find that in these industries, the effect of CEO incentives is even more pronounced. We also find that China should care more about a kind of like process innovation, which is more helpful to catch up to the technological frontier than a product innovation. And we find that the effect of CEO incentives on this process innovation is larger than for the product innovation. And then last but not least, we also address the concern that these high-powered CEO incentives, on the one hand, they can induce effort, make CEOs work harder. On the other hand, they can potentially induce myopia. There's evidence for both in the academic literature. And we kind of like tease out this myopia versus effort channel. For instance, in Germany, there are like many family-oriented firms. These family firms are probably like more long-term oriented. And then the kind of like effort story for the same level of CEO incentives, you should see more technology transfer by such firms, so the same level of CEO incentives. But under the myopia story, this should kind of like, limit this. And we find evidence here consistent with the myopia story.
So the idea is that in the short run, CEOs or companies exchange the access to the Chinese markets and potential profits to be made there against the longer term losses by feeding their own competition. by transferring those technologies. What evidence do you find that indeed there are losses from this technology transfers? And what's exactly the mechanism here behind these not so good long run performances of companies who have engaged in the transfer?
A great point. So we look 5 to 10 years after the initial technology transfer took place. We compare the future technological catch-up from China versus other countries for firms with different CEO incentives. And our findings suggest large negative long-term consequences. First, when producing its own innovation, China sources more knowledge from firms that used to have these high equity incentives in the past. Second, we observe more inventors ending their US-based employment for these firms, moving to China to work for a new employer in the next 5 or 10 years, which we interpret as like China specifically kind of like poaching key R&D personnel of these firms. And then third, firms managed by these high delta or high-powered incentive CEOs, they face stronger future competition from China in the technology space. So let's say you're an aircraft manufacturer. If China is mainly filing patents in plastics and textiles, not a competitive threat for you. If not, China starts filing patents in aircrafts, competitive threat for you. And we find that China's future innovation output converges more towards the one of those firms that used to be run by these high-powered CEOs in the past. So this is pointing towards more technological competition for these firms. And outside the technological area, we also find that these firms experience lower sales growth 10 years into the future.
Right. So now if we sort of have take this fact as given, so what follows from it, right? So what change to CEO incentives, according to your work, would align better long-term shareholder incentives with those of CEOs? So when it comes to making technology transfers?
So this is an important but also tricky question. So let me emphasize that the results that we find are specific to Western technology transfer to China. Of course, one thought is that you can try to make CEO compensation more long-term oriented to alleviate the points that we find. This is one way to go about it. We don't push this as a policy implication too much, because there might be other effects, undesired side effects, because there might be other outcomes, scenarios where high-powered CEO incentives can be beneficial, and then these have to be traded off against each other. So what one can do, what for instance the United States has been doing and what is not happening in Europe to the same degree, is one can send up kind of like bodies at the national or European level that review kind of like technology transfer from a national security perspective, so that a firm either has to get approval for this technology transfer, or that these government bodies have some time to review this technology transfer. This would actually not be happening at the level of individual technologies. I think this is impractical, but one could implement this at the level of joint ventures, which is the kind of like mechanism how this technology transfer is happening, that firms need approval for joint ventures in China, or maybe one could restrict this to certain industries. Another avenue might be also that firms set up so-called technology transfer review committees. This is something that we came up with ourselves. So the idea is that within the firm, you kind of institutionalize the thought process of thinking through the upsides and downsides of technology transfer to China. And then this might raise more awareness inside the firm and provide opportunities for stakeholders to speak up against this. But since it's inside the firm, the executives can ultimately make the final decision if they think this is a worthwhile thing to do.
Very good. Then I'll try to summarize some of what you said. You said a lot, so I'm going to miss the mark here to some extent, but let me see whether I get the main points right. So, what what market access barriers do Western companies face? Well, first point is you said Western company faces not just a Chinese company when trying to access the market, but also the Chinese government. And the Chinese government takes into account the externalities of the technology transfers, which the Western company does not necessarily, because it's just trying to maximize its profit. But in the end, what's important here, that the lack of rule of law, which makes everything here quite complicated, and there are many ways, special audits, for example, that Chinese government can twist the arm of the Western company. Is it getting worse? You think that the awareness has increased significantly, also not just from companies, but governments, the public in the West, if you will, and this theme, all else equal, makes it a bit more difficult. Westerners are more aware, Western companies, but also governments, about the long-term consequences of that. So the idea behind the paper you wrote is simply, it's not simply, but it is that short-term benefits are what drives CEO incentives, or the contracts of CEOs, and the long-term potential adverse effects of transferring technologies is not really priced well by stock markets, or stock markets having a hard time, such that the benefits occur in the short run. CEOs can pocket them, move on, and the company may then face loss or less good future going forward, which again is not anymore the CEO's problem. And you find indeed quite significant effect, or you do find effects of that kind. And interesting, you said when you look at these high-powered incentives for CEOs, you only find it in China, i.e. You do not find it in other emerging markets, if I understood correctly. Are the losses indeed tangible? Do we see them? And again, you said, yeah, after 5 to 10 years, you do see quite significant losses, not least because indeed the future competition from China for these companies then arises, and you can see lower revenue growth for these companies who have indeed engaged in this kind of transfer. What should be changed? You said, well, you could change the contracts, make them more long-term oriented, but at the same time, obviously, that has other potentially adverse effects. So you're not strongly advocating that, and maybe some more supervisory agencies via the government or within companies, that they are more aware, more forced to think about this, debate this, bring this on the table. Was it a fair summary?
It was an excellent summary.
Well, then, thanks again for your time and sharing your thoughts with us today, Jean-Marie. Very interesting, and I'm sure that topic won't go away.